Welcome now to the midday for a Monday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and Madison Opera is putting on the play. Well, it was a book originally, then a play, and now an opera, as well as a film, has taken various forms. Dead Man Walking, the opera, the music is by Jake Heggie. And one of the principals in the cast is Suzanne Mentzer, and she is with me here in the midday today. Welcome.
Hey. Hello.
Let's see, you play the part of the mother of one. Oh, you play the mother of the
accused.
Yes,
yeah,
the condemned. I do. That's
yes,
right.
Yes, I do.
And none of the roles in this opera sound, to say the least, light. This is pretty intense stuff.
Absolutely.
So how is it singing the part of Mrs. Patrick DeRocher?
When I first did this opera, I sang the role of Jade Boucher, who was a mother of one of the victims. And so I saw it from that point of view. And then I added the role of the mother of the Mrs. DeRocher is the mother of the convict. And they're both equally powerful. I'm a mother myself. I have a 25-year-old son. So I can actually channel that, although my son's a pretty good boy. He hasn't spent time in jail, I don't think. But it's so emotional. I have two major scenes, and one of them is in the courtroom asking for them to save my son's life. And the other one is right before he's executed, saying goodbye. So both of them are so emotionally charged. And I think it's what's interesting, it's about this piece in general, is I think the audience can identify with all the parents. You know, if you can see all sides of an argument, and it doesn't really stress one side or another. There's a great quartet between all the parents, and actually sextet, with Sister Helen, and they're all saying you don't know what it's like, because no one could possibly know until you walk in those shoes. So it's very emotional.
You know, it's one thing to do a story like this as a play or as a film with that emotional intensity, but when you're doing it as an opera, you have to sing that emotional intensity. Is that particularly difficult for something like this?
Well, it's interesting, because I thought it was going to be hard. And I think that it's not an opera about lots of pretty singing. We actually let our voices show more emotion and find those colors. And it's very, the libretto is so much like speech. It's not awkward, and we don't go back and repeat sections or anything like
not
in
a lot
Bel Canto. Right. Right, right. So it's just like singing a really good play. So we don't really focus on that so much. We try to sing the correct pitches and the correct rhythms, and they're very, very tricky, because you want to make it sound like it's absolutely second nature without having to think, and that's tricky.
Were you familiar with the music of Jake Heggie before this?
Yes, I was.
I mean, before you played either of those two roles?
He had given me the score to Dead Man Walking a year after it premiered, and hoped that I would do Sister Helen at some point, and I was always booked and couldn't do it, and I was really bummed. And then when this happened, these other roles, I thought, wow, it's the next best thing, but it's really actually better in a way.
This is, I think, what, his first opera, right, from 2000?
Yes.
And he's gone on to do other American themes, including Moby Dick.
Moby Dick's incredible. Incredible. And his orchestral writing is so exquisite. It sums up all the emotion. You know, some stories don't lend themselves to opera very well, even some
Tchaikovsky's
contemporary.
Eugene Onega comes to mind for one.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So, and even on contemporary pieces, that's always a dilemma. I mean, why would you set something to music? But this just totally lives in the music. It enhances every emotion. So.
And you have brought some music with you, some of your, not from this opera,
from
another project, a CD that you've done called Letter to the World. And what's the premise behind that?
They're all songs by Carlisle Floyd, who's a well-known opera composer, but many people didn't know he composed songs. And I had premiered one of these cycles back in 83, and had been trying to get them recorded for years, and nobody was picking up on it. So I kick-started the project myself.
And a lot of that done these days.
Well, it was really successful, and he's 87 years old, and I wanted to get this done while he could still help supervise. And so I also added another long cycle of 10 songs that are about music, and then his biographer found very early songs in the Library of Congress that were in manuscript form. So I added three of those.
And you were telling me earlier that Carlisle Floyd didn't even remember writing.
No, these pieces. They were so early. It was so funny. Yeah, he was like, wow. He was 18 on one of them, and you could tell it was a novice writer because of he couldn't keep all the bars. They had to split bars between staves, you know, and it really scribbled. But it's a wonderful song, so go figure.
You never know what's out there.
I know.
Well, so we'll hear a few of those from this. CD is called Letter to the World, the songs of Carlisle Floyd. And what's this first one?
This first one is from Citizen of Paradise, which is basically really a monodrama. It's sort of meant to be seen, but I wanted to get it recorded for posterity. And it's has a prologue and epilogue, and there are 19 segments of it, and it's basically following through Emily Dickinson's emotional life through letters and poems. And a lot of people have set Dickinson, but
sure.
This is pretty interesting. They're different: friendship and society, love, nature and death, and solitude. So this one is
love, I think.
First one of love, yes.
From the songs settings by Carlisle Floyd, and my guest Suzanne Mincer is the performer.
Confess that I love him. I rejoice that I love him. I thank the Maker of heaven and earth that gave him to love. I confess that I love him.
And that's, I was going to say, the long and the short of it, but it's just plain short.
It is short, yeah. They pack a wallop.
And so what do you feel about the connection between the music and the text in the song like
well,
that?
Well, it's really interesting because Carlisle, a lot of people don't know that in all his operas, he did his own libretto. But on these, they're texts of other people. This one is Dickinson. It's funny. I mean, the most famous, I think, Dickinson settings are by Aaron Copland.
Sure.
And I like these better, I think, because I've lived with them so long. I mean, it's terrible to, I don't mean to insult Aaron Copland, but I've lived with these for so long. And I think because these are knitted together as a drama, a monodrama, they work so well together. So they're a joy to perform, too. It's a sort of an emotional journey, too, just like Dead Man Walking.
Is it harder to sing a series of very short songs like this? Because you have to kind of like, in a sense, start over so quickly with the next one.
Right. The hardest thing is just remembering which one comes next, to be honest with you.
You don't have a little cheat sheet on the back of your wrist.
No, well, it's been tempting, let me tell you. But on this one, it's easier because there's a progression of thought that goes through from song to song to song. When it's just like the other cycle that's on here, that's a little harder to remember what's next.
You mentioned these operas by Carlisle Floyd, and I mean, it does ring a bell, but what are some of the titles?
Well, his most famous and most done, performed one is Susanna, which was received, I think, a Pulitzer Prize in the late 50s. It was his very first opera, and it's done all over. And then he wrote Mice and Men.
Steinbeck. Well, okay.
Yes, and in Milwaukee, actually, they're doing sort of a project where they're doing most of Carlisle's lesser-known work. So next year they're doing Wuthering Heights. I'll be in that. They're going to record it and do it in concert, and they'll add his other pieces. He's got fabulous pieces. They're just not done that much.
Did you say that you were going to be involved in it?
I am involved.
Okay.
Yes.
Like in Wuthering Heights.
What Wuthering part Heights. I'm going to do Nellie, I think it is. Mm-hmm.
Well, back on the Jake Heggie score, I just want to. This is a sort of a digression for a second here, but we mentioned Moby Dick. Are there any parts for women?
There's one part, but it's a boy pants role.
course,
for a high soprano.
Of course, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Opportunities among the crew there to
exactly.
diversify a little bit.
Fabulous role, though, for a very high soprano. Yeah.
Well, we're going to go back now to the CD, Letter to the World. And we've just heard Love, of course, based on a text by Emily Dickinson. And now another popular theme for songwriters is nature.
That's right. This one's If Roses Had Not Faded. And I'm including this one because it's very melodic and beautiful. Not too complicated.
If roses had not faded and frosts had never come and one had not fallen here and there, and things that do
from that collection called Nature. And as you promised, Suzanne, that was relatively lyrical and straightforward, mm-hmm. simple song celebrating nature. Would this, when we get into Death and Solitude, does that...
Well, Death and Solitude is pretty... I think we've had enough Death and Solitude with Dead Man Walking, frankly.
I'm sure you have, Biden. By the way, let me do another quick digression here. And we haven't actually mentioned when these performances are of Madison Opera, Dead Man Walking, music by Jake Heggie. Two performances. One is this Friday night at 8 at the Overture Center for the Arts, and the other is Sunday afternoon. That's April 27th at, what does that say, 2:30? Looks like.
I'm not sure.
Yes. Well, as long as...
I should know, but I'll be there.
You have to get there a little early. That's what you're here in Wisconsin for.
Yep.
And where do you hail from?
I live in Carmel, California, but I've been singing professionally 34 years this year, and I've sung 20 years at the Metropolitan Opera, where I'll be back there next fall.
You have favorite roles there?
Ariadne of Naxos, the composer, is one that I did quite often. And Cherubino I did a lot at the Met. All the Mozart stuff is what I did there, pretty much, and Strauss.
Hard not to like Mozart.
It is hard, you know.
And the Strauss is... How would you characterize Richard Strauss as an opera composer?
Oh, I love Richard Strauss. But I think, the ones that I focused on were the Hofmannsthal libretti, so they really were incredibly well-written textually. But Ariadne, that's like Primal Scream therapy. It's about 45 minutes of craziness. And then, Rosenkavalier, on the other hand, is what, four hours of
just
intense...
Just whipped cream in a way.
Yeah.
It's such lush, gorgeous stuff.
It's fabulous. I love Strauss.
And the thing is, yes, you can have considerably different tastes that you would enjoy one versus the other.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, okay, so we're going to skip over Death and Solitude.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
So you say you've had enough of that with the Dead Man Walking for now. But you did mention these early songs. Are these the ones that you're referring to?
Yeah, when it's funny. 18? Just before the recording, before we were going to record, I got a message from Carlyle's biographer. He has a new biography out. And he sent me these manuscripts that are very hard to read. They're really chicken scratch that he had found that were Carlyle's early songs. And so one of them was written on New Year's Eve, 1944, when you were old and gray. And at the very end of the song, he wrote for Nancy, who has no idea why. And apparently this was a friend of his sister, Nancy Steele.
Uh-huh.
And he was 18 at the time. And what's amazing about the song is how mature it is and how advanced it is for an 18-year-old, and it's very similar to a lot of the songs, maybe John Duke songs and things like that, but when you look at the manuscript, it's every little thought is written in to the music, and it's really, really sweet.
Some composers do it that way, right?
Well, this is a lot, but it's really sweet, yeah. And Carlyle says he has no recollection writing it, so.
And so this is When You Were Old and Gray.
When You Were Old and Gray.
Written by an 18-year-old.
Yes.
When you are old and gray and nodding by the fire,
Do you see any influences in this song written by an 18-year-old back in 1944?
Influences?
Yeah, I mean, do you think that Carlisle Floyd is writing under the impression of some other composer?
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of Silas Doherty in there, and but, you know, he ends up growing. Like, some of the ones in that first cycle that we played really are very similar to his musical motifs in his operas. So he really grows later. But it's fascinating to me. He also had an extended vocal range written in that first song, and it was really a challenge, you know.
what really makes the greatest challenge for you as a singer in a performance?
I think it's just it's a total process. It's very organic for me. And eventually the words and the music have to become one, and the drama. So, I mean, that sounds so trite, but it's very hard to do. Takes a lot of thought, a lot of time away from the piece, just thinking about it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
A lot of mental work.
Almost kind of unbidden, I would guess.
Yeah, I just sleep with the score under my pillow, and it's osmosis. No, but really, and I think what's cool about any kind of vocal music is, I mean, it's an endless amount of repertoire, but it changes as you do it in different points of your life, so you can interpret it a different way.
Sure.
So it's always fresh in a way, yeah.
If it's good stuff.
If it's good stuff, yeah, that's right. And I usually go for the poetry first. And then I'll see if I like the setting, because I have to understand what it means to interpret it. It has to speak to me. Yeah.
Well, that's true. You cannot convey the meaning unless you know what it is yourself.
Yeah, right.
Can't fudge that one.
Yeah. I wanted to mention, too, that the pianists on this recording are incredible. Grant Lunick, who was one of my colleagues when I taught at Rice University, and then Christopher James Ray, who's actually a prodigy of Carlisle Floyd's.
Well, that works. That's handy. Well, I think we have time for one more from this collection. It's called Letter to the World, a CD featuring my guest today, Suzanne Mentzer, who's performing the part of Mrs.
Desrochers.
Mrs. Desrochers.
Patrick Desrochers.
Yes. And this opera set in Louisiana.
It is set in Louisiana, and I don't know if anybody out there has watched True Detective, but it sort of permeates this entire thing.
An opera that is much talked about, which is to say Dead Man Walking, and yes, same story as the film and the play and the book, and it's, well, the original book is nonfiction.
Yes, and it's absolutely, yes, Sister Helen, it's her birthday today. Happy birthday, 75 years. But it is truly an experience. I highly recommend people come to see it. It's not a toe tapper, it's a piece of drama.
So what's this last song by Carlisle Floyd?
Oh, we'll just end with a quick piece, which is the epilogue of that first cycle about Emily Dickinson. It kind of sums up the whole point of the recording.
Epilogue from those songs, settings of poems by Emily Dickinson, the settings by Carlisle Floyd, who is a composer who's been with us for a long time and is being highlighted in this CD called Letter to the World, which is on the
GPR Records.
GPR Records label, featuring my guest Suzanne Mentzer, who is playing the part of Mrs. Patrick Desrochers. That would be the mother of the condemned in the opera Dead Man Walking. Madison performances this Friday night and then Sunday afternoon at the Overture Center here in Wisconsin.
Right, and I was going to say Thursday night is an event at one of the churches.
Oh, is it?
We have an interview with Sister Helen and Jake Heggie, and I'm going to sing some other songs by Jake.
They're all going to be in town.
They are, yeah.
Well, thanks for stopping by and giving us some insights.
It's great to be here.